So the three kinds of patience. First one is the patience of not retaliating. Okay, so that's, you know, when somebody harms us, then the patience of not retaliating. Okay. Second patience is the patience of enduring suffering. So when we're sick or we face misfortune, in other words, we're not here concentrating so much on a thing that's harming us, but just a bad situation, then not getting at, you know, avoiding anger at that and being able to be relaxed and patient through that. And then the third kind of patience is the patience to definitely practice the Dharma and go through the difficulties of practicing Dharma, like coming to teachings on nights when the roads are slippery. Okay? You know, that's that kind of patience, where you have that patience to really, you know, there's some difficulty or some, you know, problem, but there's patience to do it. And then also just the patience. That one also includes, and I'll go into it more later, the patience of how, it's kind of like the courage of being able to look at your own mind, you know, and being able to meditate on impermanence, being able to meditate on emptiness, being able to, you know, start to let go of some of the rigid concepts. So that takes a lot of patience to do that, because sometimes the mind recoils and says, uh-uh, I'm not going to do this. Yeah. Okay, so those are just the three patiences. I want to go back to the first one. Now, the patience of not retaliating, because that's the big one. Now, when things happen, when people harm us and we get upset. Okay. Now, remember here, when I'm using the word anger, it's covering this whole range of things, which can be small, like being bugged or irritated or annoyed. It can mean kind of being judgmental or critical or outraged or hostile or holding grudges or out and out rage and hatred. You know? So it's when I use the word anger, I'm using it in a really generic way for this whole scenario of emotions, which all have the same common quality of we exaggerate the bad qualities of something or project bad qualities that aren't there, and then we want to either escape from it or strike back at it because we can't endure the situation. Okay? And so the thing is, it may start out as irritation, but if we aren't careful, then it builds up to, you know, kind of, you know, being critical and judgmental, and then it builds up further and we're outraged or enraged, and then afterwards we hold a grudge. And so there can be a real continuum in any specific situation if we don't take care of what happens with this anger. Yeah. Oh, and before I go into this, another difference with psychology, and I think this is real important, or at least somehow for me it was quite meaningful. The Buddhist idea of personality is that we are a composite of many, many different mental factors. And some of these mental factors are constructive ones like faith or concentration or wisdom or kindness. Some of the mental factors are more harmful ones like jealousy and pride and anger. And we have all sorts of, I mean, incredible number of different mental factors. And we're just a composite of all of these different things. And at one moment, one may come up. And at another moment, one that completely contradicts this first one may come up. In regards to the same object. So one moment we're loving, next moment we're hate. One moment we rejoice, next moment we're jealous. One moment we're humble, next moment we're proud. And so we're composed of all these different mental factors, and they don't all agree with each other, but they come up at different times. And when they come up, they're in manifest form. And then when they aren't in manifest form, then they're you have the potential, or what we say, the seed of the disturbing attitude there. Okay? So like right now, for example, I'm not manifestly angry. But I could become angry soon. Why? Because the potential still exists in my mind. I have the seed of anger because I haven't removed that seed yet. I haven't realized emptiness. Okay? So, you know, we have these different seeds, but there's not the manifest delusion at, or disturbing attitude at the, at any particular moment. And this is something that I sense is slightly different than in psychology, because psychology talks about like a repressed emotion, like it's there and it's manifest, but it's like, it's, I mean, you know the feeling, yeah, it's just pushed, but it's still there. It's like really solid. It's there, you know? Whereas in a Buddhist sense, it's not manifest. There's just the potential. There's just the seed. Okay, and of course the seed can be quite dangerous. I'm not poo-pooing that. But it's not like, you know, you're angry 24 hours a day there under the surface. Okay, now sometimes what may be happen is people may have manifest anger, but they not may not be aware that they have manifest anger. Like these situations we were talking about you don't realize that, you know, you're upset until after you've already said something, but if you look back, you've been upset for half an hour. Yeah, or passive aggression. That's still manifest anger, but we just don't have the self-reflection to be able to identify it. So that is manifest. But this other stuff, you know, I mean, when you're sleeping, you don't have manifest anger. Well, most of us. at least not all the time. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, our society takes so much delight in blaming our problems on somebody else. Yeah, I mean, what you said about all the lawsuits, it's like we lack any kind of patience for the fact that other people might make mistakes. So if you walk up here, you know, or if you leave here tonight and you slip on the stairs, you're going to sue me, you know. Our society has so little patience for anything. Yeah.
So then in that sense...
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, because see, any situation is a dependently arising situation. And so I think in our pop culture, we have two extremes. One is to blame the problems on somebody else, and the other is to blame the problem on ourselves in the name of taking responsibility for it. So a lot of people don't understand what taking responsibility means, and what it becomes is self-blame. Okay? And I think that in any situation that happens, it's dependently arising. It's happened because of so many different causes and conditions. You know? And some of it comes from this side, and some from this side, and some from all around. And so in a lawsuit, what we're trying to say is one is, you know, more important than the others, and kind of the others don't exist, only this one exists. But in any situation, it's dependently arising. So the thing about taking responsibility is to recognize what our share of it was, and not take more and not take less. Okay? Because when we take responsibility for things that aren't our responsibility, then we start feeling guilty. When we don't take responsibility for things that are our responsibility, then we blame somebody else. So the thing is, you know, whenever there's a conflict, it's usually, you know, I did something, the other person did something, there might be a whole bunch of, you know, other things involved. But I really feel the more I've thought about it, is that we really have to go beyond this whole blaming thing. Yeah, that as soon as our mind just wants to blame and find one thing to say this is the major cause and it's just because of that, not because of anything else, then we get so stuck, and it becomes, our own mind just becomes so tight. So I really think that we have to do something about this tendency to want to blame either somebody else or ourselves, and rather instead replace it with, well, this is a dependently arising situation. Let's look at all the things that are happening in here. Mm-hmm. Except our legal system isn't usually done with a lot of compassion. I think if you had people in the legal system that really took care with this whole compassionate thing. Yeah. I mean, because if somebody has been victimized, you take it to court, you send the other guy to jail, then you feel, okay, you got your fair justice. But in actual fact, it doesn't undo the harm you received. It's rejoicing in somebody else experiencing pain, which is, from a Buddhist viewpoint, a negative motivation. Yeah? Rejoicing in somebody else's pain. Whereas if it's done with the thing of, okay, somebody harmed me, I don't want this person to create more negative karma themselves or harm somebody else by doing this, so I'm going to get involved with the legal system in order as a preventative measure. Yeah? Then out of compassion, that's a completely different thing. But we have to be really careful because so often it's easy to rejoice in somebody else's harm. Yeah? Or to wish somebody harm. Especially, you know, you read the news and, you know. I don't think it's even so passive. No? Well, we could, yeah. It's quite aggressive. It's very easy. Very easy for that to happen. And that's why I think this whole thing of compassion for the victim and the perpetrator is really the key. And not just, you know, putting it on one, putting it on the other, but really having compassion for both. Yeah. And Thich Nhat Hanh exemplifies that so much, especially when he does retreats with Vietnam vets. Yeah. I mean, that's just so incredible. Love you guys. So, with the... with the patience of not retaliating, then there's a lot of different techniques about how to deal with the anger. And so I was going to review a lot of the things from working with anger that are also in What Color Is Your Mind. But in my notes, I had one real interesting sentence under this one. So before I get into that, I'll read you this sentence because I think it's something very powerful about it. By understanding the futility of praise and blame in this and future lives, don't get angry when you're insulted. And when I thought about that, the futility of praise and blame, I really thought, I mean, to me, that phrase is very, very powerful because so much of our anger is revolving around praise and blame. And we think it's only revolving around the blame part. We get angry when somebody blames us. But the blame is so linked to the praise. Because the more attached we are to the praise, the angrier we get when we don't get it, or the angrier we get when we get the blame instead. Yeah? So if we want to remain attached to the praise but get rid of the aversion to the blame, then we're fighting a losing battle. Yeah, because they're so closely linked, you know, that mind that's just so, what other people say about me, what other people think about me is so important. And I think that's a real, real dilemma for us. Yeah? Yeah. By understanding the futility of praise and blame in this and future lives, avoid getting angry when you're insulted. And so when you sit and think about it, I mean, you could do a whole analytic meditation on this one thing, okay? Just the whole thing, the futility of praise and blame in this and future lives. You know, just do an analytic meditation about that. And just think about, what good does praise do me? You know, what benefit does praise give me? Yeah, it doesn't give me more money. It doesn't give me a longer life. It doesn't give me a good rebirth. It doesn't give me more merit or more wisdom. It doesn't, you know, make me closer to liberation, enlightenment. No, praise doesn't really do a whole lot for me when I really think about concrete benefit. I mean, it makes me feel good, but in terms of bringing any kind of concrete benefit, you know, it really doesn't. You know, but then the mind would say, well, but if I get praise, then I might get more money. Yeah. But then again, you know, what good is the money? You know, What good does the money do you in a long, in the long term? Mm-hmm. But then the question is, if it's valid in the context of self-esteem, why are we giving the power of our self-esteem to somebody else to determine? Then it's not self-esteem, it's others' esteem, isn't it? Yeah. I'm not talking, I mean, kids, because, you know, I'm not talking about them right now. Yeah. Yeah. About how we get it. I mean, kids feel the same way. But the thing is, we're adults, and so it's you know, we have a little bit more discriminative ability. Yeah.
And
I'm trying to have this. Yeah. I mean, it's something we're so sensitive to. And so the thing is, the more attached we are to the praise, then when somebody doesn't give it to us, when we're expecting it, you know, like those times where you're just kind of waiting for somebody to tell you you look good, or tell you thank you for something you did, or tell you how kind and thoughtful you are, and you're waiting for it because you really were nice, or you look good, or you were kind and thoughtful, and you're waiting for that acknowledgement, and they don't give it. I mean, what happens to us? We're just so miserable. And that's, you know, just in a case, they didn't even criticize us. They didn't give us what we thought we deserved. Yeah? And then on top of that, if they criticize, then whammo, you know, we're off on the move. So it's a real difficult thing. And I think that comes because we haven't developed the ability to evaluate our own actions. Now, so we're really so dependent upon what other people think to determine whether we're right or wrong or good or bad or beneficial or not beneficial. Whereas if we had more self-reflection, you know, and we were able to look at our own actions and say, oh yeah, that was a kind thing. I recognize that as kind. It doesn't matter to me whether other people recognize it, but I recognize that was a kind thing and I rejoice in that and I dedicate the merit. Then we can leave it at that. We're not waiting for the recognition. And the same way, if we made a mistake, we can acknowledge our mistake, and then if somebody else points it out, we don't have to get so upset about it because there it is. I mean, and we're able to acknowledge it ourselves and recognize that it's completely okay to make mistakes, in the sense that it doesn't mean we're bad and evil people. It does mean we're good if we improve, but we don't have to sit there and feel guilty and get into so much self-blame. But we really so often lose this ability of self-reflection, and then we get so confused, you know. Oh, did I do the right thing? You know, I mean, did I just you know, we get real confused about our actions if we don't get the kind of feedback that we expected. And so I think it's real important, and this is a meditation in the evening, you know, really looking back over our actions is quite important, and learning to develop that kind of ability to evaluate ourselves. And then also, you know, just developing some practice in feeling okay about making mistakes. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and other people notice, and yeah, I made it, and it's not the end of the world. Then I would say, don't wait until the evening. Okay, do it a little bit earlier. Some kind of review, or maybe even just periodically throughout the day. Now, stop for a couple minutes and kind of review what's happened. Take a sensor, or a sensor, you know, kind of check up what's going on. And then recognize that sometimes, you know, it is really hard to evaluate our own actions, and we don't know what our motivation is. And we think we have one motivation, and we realize later that we had another one. And that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But some kind of gentleness with ourselves, so that, so that our, you know, whether we praise or blame ourselves, we don't take so seriously, and whether others praise and blame us, we don't take so seriously. That doesn't mean we disregard other people's feedback. I think it's good to listen to their feedback and, you know, deal with the situation. But it's what we're talking about here is the attachment to the good feedback and the aversion to the bad feedback. So, how about if we do some meditation on that? Okay?